It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. It's a beautiful Tuesday in New York and hopefully up and down the Northeast, you know, 95 and trying to get through Philadelphia after that collapse thanks to that truck. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West at 920. At the bottom of the hour, Lexi Lawless talks about going over to Australia and the Women's World Cup and everything else with Messi coming over to discuss. We'll have all that on our mind. Meanwhile, it's going to be an historic day. As we know what happens at 3 o'clock Eastern time, the president will turn himself in, which brings us to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
And frankly, this could get even worse for the Biden team because the Chinese are unlikely to have just a spy station there. They probably have a deeper relationship with Cuba than we realized.
China. Why lie? They have a spy station in Cuba. The Wall Street Journal broke the story, and Biden denies it, then confirms it. The threat is real, and the administration is not up to fighting against it. Just begging to be friends, we'll discuss.
Number two.
The foreign national who allegedly bribed Joe and Hunter Biden allegedly has audio recordings of his conversation with them. 17 such recordings.
Think about that. Caught on tape. That's what's alleged by Senator Grassley, Hunter, Joe, and Burisma executives talking about illicit payments when Joe was VP. This is beyond explosive. There are questions abound, including where are these tapes and why is the FBI redacting them on these documents?
Number one.
What I can tell you for sure, I know about that indictment, is there's probably about a third of the evidence they actually have is in that indictment.
There's a lot more.
There will guaranteed be a lot more.
Up first, a former president and perhaps future president arraigned on 37 counts ranging from withholding national defense documents to making false statements. I'm talking about Donald Trump. No cameras anywhere and protests and rallies could be everywhere. Also, it sounds like some of the Republican nominees are changing their tune when it comes to the documents and Trump's role in this. We'll have it all. And that's really the case. Just to review. We know today at 3 o'clock, the president will turn himself in. No cameras. There's going to be no video, no sketch artist. Everyone's told leave the electronics outside. One count of withholding a document of record. One count of corruptly concealing a document of record. One count of concealing a document in a federal investigation. A count of scheme to conceal and a count on the false statements or representations. And of course, we know about accounts on conspiracy and everything like that. He'll plead not guilty and then waive his right for a speedy trial. So he'll try to drag it out, get the nomination, win an election, and pardon himself. Now, we know that every Democrat thinks he's guilty. We know that in the past he's been unfairly targeted. We know this is a self-inflicted error, regardless of how it turns out. What's interesting is Chris Keiss is one of his attorneys, and he's going to go ahead and offer a few motions. Number one of the motions is going to say, hey, you can't take my lawyer and have him testify against me. And everything that you made him say should be thrown out. Number two, and including his text messages. Number two, the witnesses are all complaining that you pressured them, threatened them, and extorted them. If that is in fact true and it ends up being they have to go on trial to defend themselves and their practices, you'll have to throw that out. And, of course, little by little, whittle down on the number of charges and then hope you get a friendly jury and a jury that's not unanimously going to convict you because that's what it will take. Right now, 48% of the country do think that Donald Trump should be charged with a crime. But also, 47% think this whole thing is politically motivated, including 81% of Republicans. Where do you stand? As I mentioned earlier, some of the candidates are changing their tune. Here's an example. Cut to.
No one is above the law. Secondly, it is important to note, from my years as your vice president, and also my years serving on the International Relations Committee in the Congress of the United States, the handling of classified materials of the United States is a serious matter.
We know that, and that's why you should vote for him or not vote for him. I think the whole thing could have been totally avoided. Now, here's Nikki Haley, not necessarily changing her tune, but listen, cut six.
Two things can be true at the same time. One, the DOJ and FBI have lost all credibility with the American people. And getting rid of just senior management isn't going to be enough to fix this. This is going to take a complete overhaul, and we have to do that. Two, the second thing can also be true. If this indictment is true, if what it says is actually the case, President Trump was incredibly reckless with our national security.
And that could be true. But then you say, okay, reckless. Let's convict him, 37 charges, give him 500 years in prison, all right? There's nothing, no difference between what Hillary Clinton did, only she destroyed everything. Nobody said Donald Trump destroyed anything. No one said he sold anything. What you have is Hillary Clinton destroyed everything. And it's not whataboutism. I'm just talking about two different scales of justice. And that's a huge problem. When you have a precedent. Also, how's the investigation into Joe Biden going right now? You know, all the documents that we found in his by his Corvette in his garage, in his office at the Penn Center at the University of Pennsylvania was the Biden Center. And then you had the University of Delaware. You also had Chinatown where all these documents are. How is it going? How come we don't have an update on that? How many highly classified documents are there taken from Senator and former Vice President Joe Biden? And then how's he going to be convicted? So if you're going to throw the book at Donald Trump and you say you can and you say you have the 49 pages prove it, and I read it, and there's a lot of damning stuff in there, if proven to be true. But let's see everybody held to the same standard, and then you'll eliminate that entire argument. Next, yesterday, find out this, that you know that 1023, and we don't know what a 1023 is. We're not in the middle of, we don't work for the FBI. We don't take in intakes. So the FBI takes in this credible source who's gotten paid hundreds of thousands of dollars from the FBI to help them and says, look, I witnessed some unsavory behavior in Ukraine with Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. Take this down. So they put it down at 1023, and they handed over to Pittsburgh, we found out later from William Barr, to further investigate this to see if it's true. Because if it's true, it makes the president and his family complicit in a bribery scheme. And Pittsburgh does investigation but doesn't have charging, and they hand it over to Delaware district attorney, where it goes to die, just like Hunter Biden's goes to die. Four-year investigation into Hunter Biden. Nuts. And then after seeing these documents and threatening contempt charges against the FBI director in order to see them, the oversight committee sees it and they're heavily redacted. But they say it is really damning. And it makes a lot of brings up a lot of questions about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden and Burisma. And then Chuck Grassley made his way to the microphone yesterday and he got information over the weekend, it seems, that reveals redacted are proof of tapes of conversations reportedly and extortion involving the current president of the United States. Cut 19.
The 1023 produced to the House committee's redacted reference that the foreign national who allegedly bribed Joe and Hunter Biden allegedly has audio recordings of his conversation with them. 17 such recordings. According to the 1023, the foreign national possesses 15 audio recordings of phone calls between him and Hunter Biden.
Two with Joe Biden. So let me ask you, you heard about that tapes. Mark Meadows' biographer was interviewing President Trump, tape rolling, where President Trump said some things that shows a carelessness when it comes to intelligence documents as it relates to Iran. If you have Joe Biden on tape, if this proves to be correct, getting $5 million, which is said to be in these forms, by the whistleblower, and getting Hunter Biden the job in Burisma, a job he's not qualified for, even admitted that when he did his ridiculous book tour with Amy Robach. This is different, but the level is just as damning. And you, even CNN will have to cover it. I'm going to leave some time for Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, used to handling intelligence documents when he was in the military, when he was in Congress, and beyond. We'll be talking to him, and then we'll have some fun with Alexi Lalas and then open up the phones. Busy day. So glad you're here. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
According to the 1023, the foreign national possesses two audio recordings of phone calls between him and then Vice President Joe Biden. These recordings were allegedly kept as a sort of insurance policy for the foreign national in case that he got into a tight spot.
Wow. So Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, our guest now, that was Senator Grassley. This really blindsided me, Colonel, and a lot of people are ignoring it. But the revelations redacted, Senator Grassley found out, reveal on that 1023 form that there are tapes existing showing Joe Biden in two of them and Hunter Biden in 15 of them talking about some illicit payments with this Burisma executive. Your thoughts?
Well, it's good to be with you. Good morning, Brian. That's just Russian misinformation and disinformation, and that's just a bunch of lies. We should not pay attention
to that.
Oh, yeah,
that's right.
Because, you know, Donald Trump's a Russian spy and an agent. You know, what that story is not being told on most of the other news media in the United States of America because the news media is complicit with what is happening with this Biden administration. And so what everyone is focused on today is, of course, what's happening with Donald Trump down in Miami. But if we don't understand that we have a president that is compromised, we have a presidential family that is compromised, and it's affecting our foreign policy and national security standing right now, this is a story that cannot be hid.
I don't think so.
You know, shame on – no, it can't be, and it should not be, and shame on the people that are trying to.
Here's more. Cut 21.
The 1023 also indicates that then-Vice President Joe Biden may have been involved in Burisma employing Hunter Biden. Based on the facts known to the Congress and the public, it's clear that the Justice Department, the FBI, haven't nearly had the same laser focus on the Biden family.
Can you imagine? This is what they say. The redacted portion of the 1023 had listing of the tapes that existed by this Burisma executive. Wait a second. Why would you redact it on that on an unclassified document? Why would the FBI say you can look at it, but don't look at this? Because you might ask to hear the tapes that would verify the 1023 right off the bat? What could I be missing, Colonel West?
You're not missing anything. And once again, it just shows that we have a politicized Department of Justice. We have a politicized Federal Bureau of Investigation that they're not worried about the equal disposition of justice. They're working about justice being blind toward one party, but clearly has the eyes open on another party. And really, it's blurry vision when you come to the other party that they're going after. So the American people need to be very upset about this. The American people need to be paying attention to this more than the sideshow that's going to be happening in Miami, because this talks to the rot that is occurring in Washington, D.C.
So I'm sure if you read the indictment, you couldn't have been happy about what was at Mar-a-Lago, especially you who had intelligence documents when you were in the military and when served in Congress, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But here's the deal. Again, there has to be an equal disposition of justice. Now, if I had been a commander in the United States military and I had classified documents in my quarters, I'm not talking to you on radio. I'm still sitting in Fort Leavenworth prison. So why is it that Hillary Clinton could have had an unsecure email server that had classified information going over it, and she had it in her own her place, had it in a bathroom? Why is it that Joe Biden Biden has classified documents in a garage next to his Corvette, why is it that another former vice president, Mike Pence? So all of these things we look at, we've got to treat everything the same, equally. And what I think that we need to do going forward is just say nobody, no president, nobody. You do not get to take classified, unclassified documents with you when you leave office.
I know. It just seems to me so preventable. He's going to go in there and fight. The one thing I just am amazed at, I don't think you should be threatening witnesses. I don't think you should be flipping lawyers. Michael Cohen, remember this started. They raid Michael Cohen's office, find paperwork, and 7 years, 4 years later, they're indicting President Trump in a New York courtroom. And now they're going up to his attorney and say, well, we got a reason to believe that you're complicit in a crime. So come give me everything that you have, your emails, your text messages, and submit to questioning. They're going to look with motions. Now, we're not lawyers, but they're going to offer some motions to toss that out. And then also they're going to look at some of this redacted, these highly classified material and tell Jack Smith, you can't just convict somebody and tell me it's classified. You have to show me what it says. And if Jack Smith is forced to show him what it says, they're going to have to pull it because you cannot show in an open courtroom what this classified material is. Yeah. So this all could affect the case.
Yeah, that could affect the case. And then you have to talk about intent. I mean, if you're going to charge the president under the Espionage Act, then that is talking about intent. So if he had these things, and Mar-a-Lago, let's be honest, you got Secret Service there. You have a level of security that is there. But what was the intent behind him having these documents? So you have to show some malicious intent. You have to show some nefarious designs, what have you. Because, again, you know, Hillary Clinton destroyed classified material. She just, after those materials were subpoenaed, and we talk about the email server, you know, James Comey said that, yes, it was there, it was wrong, but we decided not to prosecute this case. So why is there this prosecutorial discretion in one episode, but then not in the other? So they've got a lot of digging out of a hole in this case with Donald Trump.
All right, so I find this pretty amazing. Cuba set up a spy station. China set up a spy station in Cuba, the impoverished nation. Now, in turn, China also helped track down all those people who protested the communist government and wanted a revolution a year ago. This administration ignored it. So those people's lives are ruined or they're dead already. And they get their spy station, and Cuba gets billions of dollars. And then when asked, John Kirby denies the Wall Street Journal report that discusses this, and then comes back and says, well, it happened in 2019. I mean, are you tired of this administration blaming everything on the previous administration and lying?
I think the American people are tired of the blame and the lying. But again, when you have, I would say, 35% to 40% of the American populace that aren't getting this story, they aren't getting the conversation that you and I are having. And if we are having this conversation, they're just, you know, waving it off again as Russian disinformation, what have you. But we've got some serious issues here. And John Kirby, I've said it before, he's a disgrace. The fact that that guy ever wore a uniform in the United States of America, that's an admiral. That's appalling.
He should never take the job. If he feels as though he can't go to bat for a lot of these things the administration's doing, he should never be a spokesperson. I mean, he should not. He has got to go there and spin it. He said that the Wall Street Journal story is not true. 2 days later, it is true. Oh, but it was 2019. When is that okay? That's not how you communicate. We don't comment on things like that. How about that?
It is not okay. It is not okay, and the press corps of the White House should be livid about that.
Yeah, and the White House should just actually tell the Chinese to pull out the spy station. Thanks so much, Colonel. Alexi Lalas is next. We have some fun. Women, World Cup, 3 straight world titles. Can they do it? Alexi Lalas and Messi.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
They're ready to celebrate, ready to party, ready to run on. And they are the world champions again. 1991, 1999, 2015, and now 2019. For the fourth time, the United States of America are crowned champions of the world. And for the very first time, they've done it on European soil.
And there you go. The U.S. Women's National Team go back-to-back and win it. Are they going to go for three in a row? We're going to find out in about a month. Alexi Lalas is Fox Leeds, Fox Soccer Analyst, I should say. He's going to be joined by Carly Lloyd. They're going to be analyzing, breaking down from the studio what's happening over in Australia as the women try to be the best in the world. Lexi, great to see you.
Good to see you, my friend. How things going?
Good. Do you have off in between cups, or you still work the Gold Cup?
Oh, yeah.
Like
there's
that?
Always soccer. There's always someone kicking a ball.
Are you doing anything with the MLS?
We do some MLS stuff. Yeah. We have Gold Cup coming up and Nations League when it comes to the Europe. And, yeah, we got a lot of content when it comes to Fox.
Fox is heavily invested in soccer.
This is what we do. And there's always, like I said, there's always somebody kicking a ball somewhere in the world. Men's, women's, co-ed, naked, it doesn't matter. I'm there.
Right, and you will call it.
I'll call it.
You'll call it like you see it.
How are you doing, my friend?
Good.
You look good.
You know, it's very rare when guests ask how I'm doing, but when you ask, I think you want an answer.
Well, I do want an answer. And before we get into it, can we just put something to I want to help you out here, okay? Because, you know, I have my finger on the pulse of the American soccer community.
Yes.
Out there. A few days ago, the big news about Messi came down, right? So you go on air because you're kind of the resident soccer guy here, and it transcended everything. And I was like, this is very important. Like, you go on the air, and you start talking about
some
stuff.
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, I want to hear this. All right, we have it?
Yeah, the only thing I worry about, he doesn't speak English, and I want to see him sit down and talk. One thing about David Beckham, he learned to speak English for us, only with an accent, when he came at 32 years old. Messi said this, if it had been a matter of money, I'd have gone to Arabia or elsewhere. It seemed like a lot of money to me. The truth is...
So I made that casual comment.
Listen, I've known you for a long time. Right. You are a gentleman, you are a scholar, you are a learned man.
Ultra.
Okay. And I've been involved in entertainment for long enough to – I know what you were trying to say there, right? And, you know, it didn't – but you know also that the American soccer community, we are ruthless. We will, you know, see any type of weakness and we will seize upon it. And we
it's
will
not
drive
just soccer.
You down. Look, everybody, you know. But you got pretty thick skin here. But – you do recognize that English, albeit, you know, at that point it would have been the Queen's English, is spoken over there in England, right, by David Beckham. Now, I'm not saying that we understood everything that David Beckham said with his English, British accent and everything like that, but you do understand that he didn't really do anything in terms of changing it other than maybe in calling it soccer here and there.
Now,
right?
Now, Alex, I consider you a learned guy, street smart.
It's debatable. What?
Right. A scholar. Yeah. Very fit. How about that? Do we agree about that?
I'll take fit.
Okay,
there you
fit.
Go.
I was kidding.
No.
You know I was kidding.
Really? I knew you were kidding.
Now, do you know that one knucklehead writes it, something like some, and next thing you know.
All it takes is one.
Next thing you know, I'm getting text messages over the weekend. David Beckham speaks English. They speak English. I go, are you kidding me? In fact, I've interviewed him three times. You brought him over here.
Mm-hmm.
When they had the big press conference, you were the general manager. Were you the president?
Yes. Yeah.
You were the president. So he was your midfielder.
Right.
So, obviously, he speaks English. So, for people like Keith Olbermann and everyone else say, Brian Kilmeade pretends to be a soccer guy, doesn't know that David Beckham speaks English, is pretty beyond comprehension to me.
Well, because I respect you so much,
yes.
Even though I grew up in Michigan, I learned English for this interview
so that
you could understand what is going on here.
Even if you had a Michigan accent.
Listen, my friend, you know that I will defend you,
Thank you.
Know, up and down. You are wonderful. And also, not only did I know that you were joking, but I also know that you have an incredible history when it comes to soccer. You have been around forever. So if there's anybody here at Fox that understands the world of soccer, especially the American soccer scene, you do. You're one of us, my friend.
Right. I'm one of us. I think you were, according to reports, I reviewed the tape, you were a better player.
Again, it's debatable.
Right.
It's debatable.
But it was all the reason why you made the World Cup team was all politics.
It's all nepotism.
It's all that stuff.
Cronyism, all the different things. All the isms out there. There's always another ism.
And then you wouldn't play in Italy, politics.
Politics. Yeah. There we go.
They like tall players that win head balls and score in clutch situations and stop forwards.
It's all about the hair.
Right, absolutely. So before we go back to the Women's World Cup, the fact that Messi's coming to Miami – this is so unbelievable. As great as was Beckham, and I know he was younger, this is incomprehensible. It's bigger than Pele, I would say, because we're more tapped into the sport.
Game changer. Game changer in terms of, look, this is arguably the GOAT, greatest that we have ever seen, coming and choosing the U.S. choosing Inter Miami, choosing Major League Soccer over Saudi Arabia. And look, you deal with the news every single day, and the Saudi money that is
you're
being
give $1 billion.
It's insane. And so that we won in that sense. And now you have to maximize it. And so when we talk about maximizing 2026, for example, the World Cup, you have to maximize Messi coming and what he is going to do. And he is changing things. He's already, you know, whether it's the price of tickets going on, whether it's the interest in Inter Miami, the social media, all that kind of stuff. It's pretty amazing to see. And it's a nice feather in the cap of Major League Soccer and American soccer to have this player come and play. So we'll see ultimately what it looks like when that whistle blows.
See, the one thing for me is when non-soccer players are watching the World Cup and were asking me, they watch Messi put on a show in the final and the biggest play and deliver the championship, and everyone was able to see that. Mm-hmm. And then you take that guy and you put him in the MLS in Miami. I believe when they come to Red Bull Arena, they could go to MetLife. And I think they might be able to get 65,000 there.
Absolutely.
Do you think they will?
I think it just makes sense because, you know, a lot of the MLS stadiums are built for 20,000, 25,000. And so if you can sell out an 80,000-seat stadium, even with the rent that you're going to have to pay going over there, it makes financial sense. Now, I will say this, though. You do know that Messi does not speak English, right?
That I do know.
Okay, so
my original premise. Exactly. It's like, it's too bad he can't sit down.
I mean, it's not a knock on him, but when you do the inevitable compare and contrast with David Beckham, you know, David Beckham was and still is arguably one of the most famous people in the world. He spoke English. He appealed to people well outside the soccer tent and, you know, not your soccer moms.
He's a celebrity.
But he's, you know, he's going on the late night shows and doing all that. Messi's stardom and his celebrity are relative almost in totality with what he does on the field. And that's the big difference that I see going forward. And he's coming to a league for the first time. We're going to see him in a league where he's not playing on the best team. He's not playing with the best players. A league that is manufactured for parity.
And Miami is not doing well.
Miami sucks. I mean, right now. So they're going to have to change some things. But maybe his coming will actually help loosen some purse strings, change some of the restrictions, and actually drive MLS forward going into 2026.
Now you say, I showed my professionalism. I said, they're not doing well this year. And you say they suck.
Well, that's how I roll. That's
style?
What people expect from me. I'm not going to sugarcoat it like I do. You. Yeah.
I took the easy way out.
Exactly.
But I was going to see if that changes. I just am very curious to see. Like, he comes here August 20th, I think, August or 21st, to play against the Red Bulls, if he changes things immediately. Number two, I'd love to hear him talk about the level of play, how off it is without the spin, without the cameras around. Just listen, how close is this league? Because they keep getting bigger. It's diffusing the talent, more opportunities. Do you look at the league and say they've gotten, even though it's $300 million, mm-hmm. the value now, do you think they've gotten too big?
Yeah, I mean, there's a question. And look, we lived through the NASL.
Two divisions.
We lived through the NASL, and ultimately they continued to expand, and it folded. I don't think that's happening. I mean, you really have to look at what MLS is almost 30 years on. It's the most successful professional soccer league that has ever been in place. It's also—
In America.
In America and Canada, because there's teams from Canada too. So in North America, it's the most professional soccer, the most successful professional soccer league that has ever happened. And you put it up against other leagues, other countries and cultures. It's unprecedented how quickly it has grown, how the valuations have grown, but also the impact that it has made and the opportunities and the pathways that it has given to a whole generation that didn't have. I mean, I had to star in a World Cup to go play over in Europe. There are players now that are in MLS academies or are just starting out their MLS career that have very, very minimal experience that are getting opportunities to go play in Europe. That's awesome. That's progress.
Right. And not only that, to start. I mean, some of them are playing. So instead of I think Landon went over at 32 to Everton.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was coming off the bench and maybe started some games. Now you have guys, I'd like that 19-year-old. Can you send him over to Germany? Which is unbelievable to me.
It's a good moment for soccer.
Right. So back to the Women's World Cup. So when we look at this team, obviously they've been targeted for about 3 or 4 World Cups. This is the time where everyone catches up. From what you've seen, are they as good as past year, or is this a transition time?
It is a transition time. I mean, just age.
There's no Colly Lloyd. She's with
There's
you.
There's no Colly. She's going to be hanging with me, talking, and she did a great job, by the way, in Qatar in the World Cup. So going for the third World Cup in a row. unprecedented, never been done, men's or women's. So again, history is in the offing when it comes to this team. They're number one in the world. They have incredible depth, and we benefit from now multiple decades of putting resources into not just women's sports, even legally into what we do, but also women's soccer, which has given us an incredible head start. But now you got teams like England, and they are dying. You know, earlier we did that hit.
They've closed the gap big time.
They've closed the gap, and they smell blood with this transitional type of U.S. team that we have. And you still have some of the usual suspects, the Megan Rapinos, the Alex Morgans, Becky Salbrons, Julie Ertz, those types that have already won. But you also have this new crop that's coming up, the Sophia Smiths, that will make a name for themselves. But it's a transition. And so What do they ultimately look like, especially, like, to your point, coming up against some of these teams that are now so much farther along, like your England's, who are the European champions, and now they're looking to not only win their first World Cup, but knock off the U.S. in the process.
In your estimation, are those England leagues, the British leagues, better than the NWSL?
No, I think NWSL is still the best league
in
the
world.
That's the highest. You know, it's arguable, and people will argue it, but with minimal effort and resources, they have made up a lot of space here, because they already have the infrastructure there,
right,
and the association with some of these big teams, men's leagues teams. And so now they see also the business, because it can't be a charity when it comes to women's soccer. And it isn't a charity now. People look at it as, this is smart business. This asset is going to appreciate, whether it's the individual team, whether it's the league, and the impact that it can make.
Eli Manning bought a team.
There you go.
He bought in. Yeah, that's got to be. It's got to be.
They see around the corner.
Right. So listen, we're going to take a short time out. Are you going to stay for two blocks?
Yeah.
You've had that good a time?
I got to bust your you-know-what some more. I got all sorts of,
So far, you've really hurt my feelings twice. And it's my show, which is unbelievable. So Alexi Lalas is here. He's pumped up because Fox has got the 2023 Women's World Cup. And they have the 2026 Men's World Cup.
You know it.
It's a home game. No more going to Qatar or Qatar. Have you ever got it down what you were supposed to say?
I would do Qatar. You know, whatever.
Yeah, no, okay. Back in a moment, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Ticket sales for Inter Miami already on the rise significantly. For a ticket for July 1st, which would be before Messi's arrival, start at $34. The game July 21st already sold out, and resale tickets are more than $650. July 25th's home game with tickets selling at $3,000.
Pretty amazing. I mean, what's not happening in Miami? The Heat are doing fantastic. The president's being indicted, and Messi's coming to Inter Miami of Major League Soccer. So Alexi had to run, but I just wanted to play that. And just, I know people listening right now say that you're not the biggest soccer fan. Just know this. This is a significant news event. I mean, it's just, it's if you have a famous boxer or the Pope come over here who might have made his name elsewhere, but when they come over here, the whole world will stop. You'll be watching him score. Every goal he scored will be leading SportsCenter. We'll have it on the news. You'll see the fans line up on the outside. You'll see the stadiums being packed, all for this 5'7", 34-year-old forward. It's pretty significant. Meanwhile, in Miami today at 3 o'clock, the president will walk in, at which time we're not going to see any cameras. We're not going to see any video ever. There's not going to be an overflow room where people can watch on a monitor. There's just going to be reporters enough to watch and record. And then after the president comes in, supposed to last, I don't know how long, to be honest, because they're not going to be taking a mugshot. They're doing an electronic fingerprints. Everybody knows he's not a flight risk, so they'll come in and come out. We'll get to see the emotions. We're not even going to see Elaine Cannon, who's going to be the judge overseeing this. We're going to get to see a magistrate judge who's just going to process everything, take in the motions. And I believe this. Think about this. Francie Yakes, who's a famous prosecutor, said they might ask he be detained until trial. I mean, they're not going to do that, I don't think. He's running for president and is a president. Everything about this is unprecedented. But if they look at this and say this stuff is top secret, Iran TAC plans, this is such a risk, I'm worried that he still has stuff. Maybe we'll detain him. That's how bad this could get. I don't see that happening, but that's even going to be offered, which is crazy to think that maybe someone will say, yeah, let's just keep him in jail until the trial. I don't think they're getting a trial by almost all the experts weigh in. They're not getting a trial until 2024. So, okay, end of this year, nothing. It's looming. There's motions. There's hearings. There's appearances. Building up a law team. a legal team, I should say. And then what? If he gets the nomination, he heads towards the backstretch. In comes the nominations, the indictments, maybe another one or two. But it all waits or happens right at the end of the primaries or the beginning of the election. How crazy is that? No doubt about it, his opponents are getting a little bit more aggressive. Here's Chris Christie, who's no longer in the president's camp and planned it on unloading indictment or not, cut for.
It's the nature of the documents that he kept. I mean, battle plans against Iran, nuclear secrets, the presidential daily brief, which has the most important intelligence information that anyone in the country can get. These are not his personal documents. This isn't like his doodle notes on his pad or like a nice, you know, a newspaper article about himself. These are intelligence documents created by the government of the United States. It's our property. And the government's supposed to have that stuff, not laying around.
And he went on for an hour with Anderson Cooper. So we'll see if this helps Chris Christie rise in the polls. Chris Christie is unbelievably talented, smart, experienced, ran in blue state for a while. He was as hot as any governor in the country, had a little bit of controversy, didn't leave with the highest numbers. It's almost impossible to run New Jersey with the current situation it has right now, in fairness to him. They can't make their bills and they can't raise taxes anymore. So Lindsey Halligan was the attorney for Donald Trump when they raided Mar-a-Lago, and she said this about what the feds have. Cut 9.
Their dream is to have this trial before the election, I'm sure. They're going for the jugular in this case. I've been involved every step of the way. I've met these people. I was there at the raid. They wouldn't let me inside the property to see what they were doing. They asked for the cameras to be turned off. Why? Then they publicized a stage photo of the alleged classified documents thrown on the floor as if that's what his office looks like on a daily basis. I was also there at the special counsel hearing where they didn't want a neutral third party. Then they leaked that there were nuclear secrets in the documents they found,
which we don't know if they're true. So I read the whole indictment, 49 pages, 37 counts, one of which is to Walt Nauta, who's a naval veteran, and Trump loves him, great aide to him. So he's got the military background, served himself in the White House, and has continued with Mar-a-Lago, now in Westminster. And what I'm saying is, not to get your mind off the problem. The problem is real. It's in all 49 pages. I got it. But you just can't pretend as if you're not cherry-picking the former president and not ignoring others, including the current president of the United States. That's what has people more upset than even the documents being taken. That's why 81% of Republicans say this is pure politics. Interesting times. So glad you're here.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, this is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. This hour, we got a great hour on tap on a historic day. Barney and Company will do a simulcast. We'll find out what's happening on Fox Business Network. The Robertsons, America's favorite family, talk about their brand new season on Fox Nation. You know him from Duck Dynasty. And Michael Goodwin standing by. He would not be out there hunting in the woods. He wants to write in the middle of a metropolis. That is just his speed. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And frankly, this could get even worse for the Biden team because the Chinese are unlikely to have just a spy station there. They probably have a deeper relationship with Cuba than we realized.
China, why lie? They have a spy station in Cuba. The Wall Street Journal broke the story and Biden denies it. The Biden's people deny it, then confirm it. The threat is real. The administration is not up to fighting against it. All they do is deflect to the previous administration. We got a fight on our hands, and both parties agree. Take advantage of the bipartisanship.
Number two.
The foreign national who allegedly bribed Joe and Hunter Biden allegedly has audio recordings of his conversation with them. 17 such recordings.
Pretty big news, right? Caught on tape? That's what's alleged by Senator Grassley, Hunter Joe, and Burisma executives taking illicit payments when Joe was VP. This is beyond explosive. There are questions abound, including where are these tapes and why is the FBI redacting them when you hand out the paperwork, when you're in a private skiff? When are we going to hear from the FBI again?
Number one.
What I can tell you for sure, I know about that indictment, is there's probably about a third of the evidence they actually have is in that indictment.
There's a lot more.
There will guaranteed be a lot more.
Wow, it's hard to believe. 49 pages and there's more. Chris Christie weighing in last night. At first, a former president, perhaps future president, reigned on 37 counts, ranging from withholding national defense documents to making false statements. I'm talking about Donald Trump. No cameras anywhere, protests and rallies everywhere. Also, it sounds like some seeking the Republican nomination are changing their tune on the documents. We have it all. And that's where we'll begin. Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist. We'll talk about the documents, and it's serious. But, Michael, one of the things that stands out is the double, triple standard. I hated what Hillary Clinton does. I hate what this 49 pages says. I don't like that Joe Biden's got classified documents at all levels, strewn across everywhere he's been. But you got to get all three and put them in the same basket. Why is that so hard?
Well, Brian, good morning. Look, I think you've put your finger on what to me is the biggest problem with this case. If you look back, of course, is there no reason why no former president has ever been charged with a crime? I mean, were they all just angels once they left the White House? Or did previous generations know something about the fabric of America that we seem to have forgotten? Because you're just pouring the oil on this case, the way that, the differences between the way Hillary Clinton was treated. Don't forget, she set up a private server outside the government system to house all of the information she got, which included almost daily classified materials. So you can't say she didn't have the intent to commit a crime, which is a prime thing. So Comey's argument back in 2016 that, you know, no prosecutor would take this is one form of justice, right? You have the special counsel supposedly looking at Joe Biden's handling of classified material. Well, who is this guy, Robert Hur? No one has seen or heard from him since he was appointed. No leaks from that case. No grand jury, no subpoenas, no house raids. And then, of course, you get to Donald Trump. House raids, grand jury, subpoenas, indictments, arraignments. A whole different set of standards of justice. Is it because he's a Republican? I mean, only a fool or a liar would deny it. This is very much about politics. And that's why I think previous generations were wise not to go down this route. They knew what this would do to the country. You know, I heard a phrase the other day from somebody, a Trump supporter, but a serious person, saying, "We're not going to vote our way out of this." And it's people giving up on the system because they feel the system is rigged. Now, Donald Trump has had a lot to do with that feeling, saying the election in 2020 was stolen. But true or not, there are people who are giving up again, and that's not good for democracy. But this
and Michael, White House, can I just qualify this? I know you know this, but for the listener, they did irreparable damage in 2016, never acknowledging he legitimately won the election. Yes. That laid the groundwork for 2020.
Yes, that's right, and that is continued, right? This separate system of justice, the Robert Mueller investigation, media winning Pulitzer Prizes for articles that really in the end were just disinformation put out by the deep state, all leaks, all anonymous. Remember, Brian, how important it was that the world get Donald Trump's taxes? Remember what a defining moment that would be?
Sure.
Does anyone remember what those taxes actually said once they got them? The story disappeared.
And they ended up getting the House got it after he left office for about a year.
Yeah, and then remember before that during Russia, the meeting in Trump Tower that Don Jr. had with a Russian lawyer. Remember how that was the most explosive thing for about 6 weeks? Does anyone remember that? Because it was nothing. It was nothing. And yet here we are again. And so this idea that who are you going to trust? You simply cannot trust the government, it seems, nor can you trust the media. So when people say things like we're not voting our way out of this, it just sounds ominous. It sounds like a give up. It could sound like a threat, but it sounds like people pulling away from the basic process. And look, Joe Biden took office. I mean, I invite our listeners, go back and read his inauguration speech, where he talked about unity. I think he used some version of the word unity more than a dozen times, and that he would work as hard for the people who didn't vote for him as those who did. Where that Joe Biden was a one-day wonder. That has not been the guiding principle of his country. And as a result, the country is more disunited today than it was 3 years ago.
Right now.
And you've got these issues, as you mentioned, the Chinese in Cuba, around the world. I mean, this is a very perilous time.
Right. You have, right now, they say, according to the recent poll, 81% of self-identified Republicans say politics was driving this case. Now, you look at this and you see some things that are really disturbing. Another self-inflicted wound from Donald Trump. You know, you keeping documents, you didn't sell them. You didn't share them with anybody that was going to compromise our security. So no damage was done, it seems. I think most people would have known you would have put that in the indictment. An Iranian businessman was able to purchase the battle plan. The Ukrainian situation was fuel, but you would see all that stuff. They would love to have said Donald Trump sold this to another country. They didn't. I'll give you careless. I give you stubborn. I also don't think there's an evil intent to it. I know. Documents are documents. I get it. But now 47% of the country say the charges should be against Donald Trump. Do you know what 46%, 48% say charges should be filed. 47% say it's politics. So everyone agrees it's politics. But they say, well, he should be charged. He made a mistake. So then you're not saying whataboutism. I'm saying legally. Go back and tell Hillary Clinton when you smash your server and your BlackBerry, and your IT guy refused to comply with the subpoena to tell us what happened to 30,000 emails and what you were up to. That is also something that should get you in front of a judge and should get you indicted. So that's what people are talking about. They're not making excuse for Trump. They're saying, why now?
Well, and also, Brian, it's the process, right? So that there is no grand jury subpoena for Joe Biden's documents, no seizing of phones and laptops,
flipping his
and that
lawyer
sort of thing in the way they did with Trump. I mean, they forced one of his lawyers to talk. No attorney-client privilege for Donald Trump. And so this kind of a treatment, it's the process that lets you say, oh, look at all the things Trump did. Yes, had you used the same process with Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, you would have found similar things. I mean, think of all the classified documents all around Joe Biden's properties. Meanwhile, his son is basically selling himself to foreign powers for money, right? So how do we know that Hunter Biden didn't access those documents? Well, if we put all of the Biden people under oath and got all of their texts and emails, we would find a lot of information. So it's the process that they use for Donald Trump that they haven't used for anyone else that leads to this conclusion. And that's not an exoneration of Trump, as you say.
No, it isn't. And we're not saying that, too. I mean, he could try to play a perfect game. And then maybe you fall short and give up a hit in the ninth. But, I mean, he basically says, oh, you're coming after me? I'm gonna put my chin out, and I'm going to give you everything. Take all your shots. I'm not going to move. And to me, everybody that doesn't want him to get hit fights for him. Everyone wants him to get hit, fights to hit him. And now we're in this vortex for the last 7 years. But I want to bring people back a little bit, and that is to the investigation of Joe Biden, Burisma, and everything like that, Hunter Biden. I was shocked to see this 1023 that everybody saw this this whistleblower that came forward that has credibility with the FBI. He's got paid over $200,000 to be a credible source, came forward and says, I tell you, I witnessed a legal bribery scheme involving the former vice president, now president, and his son. They read it. People want to try to spin it. And then over the weekend, it became too clear to Chuck Grassley that part of the redacted portion of this unclassified document was proof of tapes. Listen to this. Cut 20.
According to the 1023, the foreign national possesses two audio recordings of phone calls between him and then Vice President Joe Biden. These recordings were allegedly kept as a sort of insurance policy for the foreign national in case that he got into a tight spot.
17 recordings with Hunter and the Burisma executive, 15 with Joe. And in this document, reportedly, there is something like $5 million in bribery to Hunter and one to Joe. And the comment was, Hunter's too dumb. I got to get Joe involved. And he had got the job because, drum roll, please, Joe Biden, who said, I have nothing to do with my son's overseas business dealings. Lie, lie, lie.
Yeah, and where is the FBI on this, right?
Redacting it. That's what they're doing. They're redacting it.
Yeah, but they've had this report for how many years? I mean,
Since 2020.
Well, no, but this initial one, apparently the first one was in 2017. The informant came back again, and 2020 was apparently the third time he has made this allegation. So this is not just a fluke. This is somebody who was persistent, according to what Grassley and Comer and others have talked about what's actually in that 1023, which, as you know, Brian, is the document created by the FBI from its interviews with the informant. So we don't know what all is in that. We don't know what else was left out of that, but that's a lot of stuff right there that you have an informant saying, I bribed the man who is now president of the United States. How can the FBI just sit on that? I mean, if that were Donald Trump, that would have leaked to the media immediately, right? It would have been like the meeting at Trump Tower, and all of these things would have been front page news. You would have had a special counsel. You would have had subpoenas. That's the way Republicans get treated. Democrats get a pass. Denying the distinction.
You know, yesterday, and Eric, I should have asked you this, Kevin McCarthy went to CNN. He was taking questions. And instead of waiting for the right question, he and Lindsey Graham did something that Kayleigh McEnany did. Kayleigh McEnany would do the press conferences, and all they would ask about is Russia and Trump and some scandal and his taxes. And she would go to the last page and goes, now let me tell you the 10 major stories that you should have been asking about. I was amazed by that. I loved it. And now you have Kevin McCarthy taking questions. But instead of Kevin McCarthy taking questions about Donald Trump, he said, I just want to know why you think it's okay, CNN reporter, for Annie McCabe, who got convicted of leaking classified information, to be employed by CNN, acting as an expert on CNN. By the way, Peter Strzok, another disgraced clown on CNN. James Clapper, one of 51 to sign off on the laptop. Why is he on CNN? So they are blowing off the question and going right to the topic. And if you're not going to ask me the right question, I will not be cornered to your agenda. And I love the new trend. That's how frustrated Republicans are getting.
And it's something we must admit, Brian, that Donald Trump is the guy who taught Republicans these things, right? They would not be doing this were it not for Donald Trump. He's the one who taught Republicans how to fight back. Now, he's not succeeded outside the Republican Party in many ways, but the Republicans have for too long let the media shape the narrative. And just by sitting there and answering their questions, even when you think the questions are ridiculous or biased, but answering them anyway.
Michael, I got so caught up. I'm up against a heartbreak. I blew it. I should be professional. I've gotten so emotional. I talk right through it. Thanks so much. Read his column every day. Michael Goodwin, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Brian.
Thank NYPost.com. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back. Remember I told you how the Republicans I was just discussing have blown off the questions with an agenda and just answer the questions that they wanted to get their point across to? Here's an example. Kevin McCarthy yesterday on the floor with the CNN reporter.
The former president is accused of misleading law enforcement, of a conspiracy of obstructing justice. That's a different set of facts. Are you prepared to defend him as the former president, and what other actions will the House take in the House Judiciary Committee in terms of funding?
Are you prepared to defend your network, CNN?
I'm
answering your question. You could ask me any question you want, but I'm entitled to answer the question, okay? You can't put words in my mouth. Even though your network can hire Andrew McCabe, who was fired from the FBI for leaking classified documents. Did you remove him from your network? No, you continue to put him on. You give judgment against President Trump. So your network hires Clapper, who literally lied to the American public, one of 51 other individuals that had briefings and used it politically to tell the American public that a laptop was Russia collusion.
Understood what he did? Explain Clapper. Explain McCabe. Then I'll explain to you Trump. You can't sit there and live in a glass house and pretend it's not a glass house. I like that analogy. I just stumbled onto it. Remind me, Pete, I want to keep it. Back in a moment with three of the best people ever. Make it four.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Norm, we thank you for a great day, and thank you for all the treasure you blessed us with. And I know I said I got lucky, but I know where that luck comes from, Lord, and that's from you. And thank you for my brother and one of my best friends here, and we just love you so much. It's in your son's name. Amen.
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 Today was awesome. Everyone has a pocket full of treasure. We all found a coin.
Man, these things they're so easy to peel.
The crawfish traps work to perfection.
Let me tell you something. If I'd have hit that cayenne pepper one more lick, that'd have been one too many.
And now I'm sitting around a table enjoying one of the best things on earth to eat, the crawfish, with my two best buddies. Doesn't get any better than this.
Get ready. The Duck Family Treasure is back for another season. Jace, Missy, Jeff, Jessica, Robertsons are here. But right now in studio, Jeff and Jace are here to talk about the brand new season. You know the Duck Dynasty family. You know all the players, but they're doing something totally different. Another reason to get Fox Nation. Guys, welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
Right, yeah. There was a little bit of a pause there. I did not know if you were going to say thank you. I mean, there was a little bit too much of a pause. It kind of worried me.
Well, I was going to let Jep go first. So that was touching, Jep.
That was a good prayer, I will admit.
He shared a prayer. Jep gets more nervous, so I remember that day. It was like, Jep,
because you know the cameras are on. Or you just get nervous because you're saying prayer in front of your family.
No, just talking in public in general.
I'm
not like them. They're super outgoing. I'm more reserved. So
yeah. Well, so but
the prayer thing—that's something you just grew up very religious family. Would you say that's your whole community, or is it just more your family?
I think our community. I mean, we are deep in the Bible Belt. But what's crazy is that we actually weren't raised in church, or I guess Jep was because he came along later. But for me, my parents were not believers, and so that's what I saw when they came to the Lord, and our whole life shifted for the better. I mean, I didn't learn about God in church. I just saw it happen in real life. It was the greatest transformation that I've ever witnessed still to this day. And then we started.
They
meeting.
Brought you along. They led the way.
They did. And so I remember at 14, I remember going in and asking my dad, because I had been studying the Bible, and I was like.
On your own?
On my own. Because they didn't put any pressure on us whatsoever. We lived in the woods. We worked hard. We had fun together. We were praying together. But I remember asking him about Jesus, and he's like, that's what changed my life. And
You asking your dad?
I asked my dad.
Changed your life or his?
I was contemplating coming to the Lord, but as I was studying, I was asking him questions about it, and he said that's why you saw that transformation. Because I was kind of still bitter at my dad, you know, because the early years were rough. And so so I kind of had to come to that realization. If I'm going to ask the Lord for forgiveness, I'm going to have to forgive my dad for what I saw before he came to the Lord, you know. So that's kind of where it happened. And I'm thankful for it because it made it real to me, you know.
Right. I mean, it's you, your whole family has a confidence and a self-assuredness and a kindness. Do you think that comes from your belief in religion?
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly, a lot of it for me comes back to my grandma. I was super close with my dad's mom. Just an amazing lady who loved the Lord and taught me a lot about life. She'd take me fishing, and I was basically a human trolling motor. I would just paddle the boat around, and she would just tell me about, like, you know, this is what happens in this part of your life. Don't do this. You know, don't be an idiot. She used to say that yeah. quite a bit. But
that's
yeah,
always a good axiom in any religion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my parents were working hard. My grandparents kind of raised us. That's why we're so competitive. We played domino games every day and card games. And, I mean, I just became a master at all card games. That's just what we did. And we didn't watch TV much. The only thing we really watched was The Price is Right. And she was probably in her 70s.
80s. No, I think she was like early 80s.
And she said, I have an announcement to the family. She said, I want someone to drive me, and I'm going to be on The Price is Right. And I think it's time. I'm going to win that thing. And sure enough, my dad's brother drove her to California. She got picked, and she won both showcases.
No way.
Oh, absolutely. She won.
At what age?
She was in her 80s.
81 or so.
We have a VH video of it VHS. Somewhere. We watch it every once in a while. She just swept the whole thing. She had watched that show so much. She was like a genius.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's fantastic. I mean, yeah. All right, so let's talk about your brand new season. The premise to this, where do you go and what are you looking for? Jace.
We have gone all over this country.
We have.
So what we do with our show, and I was telling you this before we were on, unlike a lot of other shows, we have no idea what's fixing to happen. We have people write in, and they give us locations with some kind of historical angle, and we let Cy pick the locations because it's fun. We're like, Cy, you pick it, which makes it, I think, hilarious. And then we go, and so I think in the ones that they just released, we went to Tennessee. I think the others were in Louisiana.
South Louisiana. Yeah,
South Louisiana. We met a strange individual who needs his own show. His name is Captain Caviar.
And what are you looking for?
There were some old estate homes that were there in the mid-1800s.
Yep.
So we're looking for, obviously, there's usually at every location we go some fantastical story about some treasure buried that they can't find. And so we're looking for that, number one. I mean, like life-changing treasure, gold cannons or...
Yeah, down there it was a cannon filled with gold.
Yeah, there was a...
Supposedly.
So we're looking for that because we have sophisticated equipment. If it's down there within 100 feet, we can find it. But along the way, you're finding all these little relics and coins and tokens, and especially in the first season that was just released.
So you assume there were metal detectors, and then you dig. You find a place, you dig. You're going to go find it, and you don't know what's going to happen when you get in there.
Exactly. And then what we do, and the TV people love, is that we'll find a way to, you know, provide a meal for ourselves, just because we've lived off the land our whole lives. We were raised in the woods. So, like, whether it's crawfish or when we were in Tennessee, it was quail. They said, oh, we have a lot of quail here. We're like, well, I know what we're having for supper. So they filmed us hunting. So we orchestrated that because I was like, I want all y'all, all the TV people,
so you travel
move
with
back.
Your gun. You travel with your guns.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
Okay.
I mean,
sorry for bringing that.
Yeah. I mean, so we live off the land, and we're going to really remote places. And so whatever we harvest and clean and cook ourselves is going to be way better than a restaurant provides anyway.
And Jeff, you guys don't miss.
Not much. We definitely didn't in the quail episode.
The quail,
we went to work on them.
I was real proud of Jeff. I mean, I think we missed one shot apiece.
Right.
For half a day, that's pretty good.
Because if you blow them apart, you can't eat them, right? Is there some place
exactly.
You got to eat them?
Well, yeah, we eat everything that we shoot. Well, you can wait for them to get out of a blow-up range.
You know what I mean? Yeah, don't shoot them too close.
Yeah, that's on you. I mean, if you blow them up, that's on you. I mean, you can wait, and there's just, in your mind, we've done this our whole lives. I mean, that's how we were raised.
I mean, when you talk about the Battle of New Orleans, one of the things they write is the reason why the Americans won is they don't miss. Because if you missed, you didn't eat.
Right.
And exactly. You guys had better guns, too. Even in the 1800s.
Exactly. But my dad, and he was talking about our grandparents, they taught us those kind of things. I mean, look, when we were young, we were poor, as in spelling poor with 10 O's. And we basically lived off the land. So however efficient you were at hunting and fishing, that's what you ate that night. So you get good at it. I mean, that's just the way it was, and I'm thankful for that.
Right. So are you guys still living in the same region of where you're – where I saw you,
we all live
in separate houses right in the same area?
We live on the same road.
Yeah.
We live on the same road. Same road.
My parents are about 25 minutes away. It's the same house that we were raised in, and they have done nothing to it with all their success, and it's just the same as when I was a kid.
And by the way, that's Jace. Jace and Jeff are here. If you're watching on Fox Nation, where the series is going to be on, they're along with Missy and Jessica. Who else is on for this season?
We have my Uncle Si. He's like the you remember that show, the Charlie Angels? He's like the Bosley. He's home base.
Absolutely.
Well, he keeps trying to turn this into a business, and we're giving most of what we find away because we meet these people along the way. We fall in love with them. It's their place. We're like, here. But my Uncle Si, he's like, no, that's run a business.
We found it.
So he's trying to market it, and he has different ways of trying to get the word out. And he wants more locations, which we welcome that because it's fun for us. So who else do we have? We have several people who make guest appearances.
My mom's on there.
Right. She's on there.
What have you done with Willie?
Willie laughs every time we tell him.
He was on one last season.
Season one, but he can't get past the embarrassment of it. He doesn't want someone to drive by and him be out there.
With the metal detector. Because
right. Yeah, he's right. Thinking, you know, a heavyset guy on a beach looking for somebody's ring.
I'm going to talk to him. I'll get him over it. I just told you, when I went to visit you guys, your family, with your dad, mom and dad were so excited because you put an extension on the back of your bedroom to make the closet bigger.
Yeah.
I go, with all the money you guys are making, you have the number one show, and that's all you're doing. He goes, that's all we want to do. It's amazing. Jace, Jess and Jeb, great to see you. Congratulations on a brand new season of the Duck Family Treasure. I know it's going to be a huge hit again on Fox Nation. Guys, stay safe.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
All right.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Always great to have the Robertsons in. They got this huge hit on Fox Nation. Just a real authentic family doing great things. It's got my mix of it. You have Discovery, a little like fishing, and then you got history, historical places and things on Fox Nation. When I'm done with this hit with Stuart Varney, I should probably take my – should I take my jacket off or is it too late? I'll take it out. It makes it look like I'm breaking the story. So I'm done with Stuart Varney, we'll be able to take some calls. And we'll be on FBN in a matter of moments. So let's listen in together.
On the button, and here is Brian Kilmeade. All right, Brian. Donald Trump heading back to Jersey tonight. He's going to hold a big fundraiser after his arraignment in Miami. Trump says if he wins the election in 24 – he will appoint a special prosecutor to go after Biden. You think that's a good idea to be looking backwards?
He's angry. He's angry because he did not go after Hillary Clinton when he got the job in 2016. Remember that. Even though Hillary Clinton weaponized this Russia investigation, now we find out she weaponized it in August. Went up to because she wanted to overwhelm her email scandal. And then once he got the job, she didn't stop. And they amped it up, and Comey and company amped it up. And for the next 3.5 years, he had 2.5 years, they had to deal with a Russia investigation and the thought of being illegitimate. So he's angry. Do I think when they get to that point, do I think that he's going to actually execute it? No. He's got to get the nomination. He's got to win the general. And he's got to beat 2 indictments. So there's a long road to get there. But I understand the mindset.
But he seems on track to get the nomination.
Let's see. I mean, this is what it is. So in the perfect world, you look at what he did with the documents and say, I am going to judge who I vote for by the way he handled these sensitive documents. That's called the way we used to do it. And, of course, grab the documents back and put them in the archives where they belong. But now the way we do it is we go after you and we try to put you in jail. And now we have a situation where we got another investigation going on at Joe Biden, and nobody knows what's going on. We know they had stuff all over five separate locations, including in his garage on the floor. And you're saying, well, we don't know how that's going, but this guy, 37 counts. Yeah. I'm not saying that Trump is innocent. I'm just saying that please even pretend to be somewhat equal. Pretend.
Pretend, please. All right. I got to change the subject here. My head's exploding. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken blames Trump for the China spy base in Cuba. Watch this.
It was our assessment that despite awareness of the basing efforts and some attempts to address the challenge in the past administration, we weren't making enough progress on this issue, and we needed a more direct approach. We've been executing on that approach quietly, carefully, but in our judgment with results ever since. I can't get into every step that we've taken, but the strategy begins with diplomacy. We've engaged governments that are considering hosting PRC bases at high levels. It's something that we're very carefully monitoring.
Brian, it seems like he's blaming Trump, and it's always Trump's fault, isn't it?
You know, President Obama did the same thing, and Secretary of Defense Gates, who stayed from the Bush to the Obama administration, would say, hey, I'm still here. Every meeting they went to, they're like, yeah, I inherited this. This was my problem. He's like, excuse me, I'm the same guy. I was with that administration. It's not all, you didn't inherit all this. Barack Obama didn't stop looking back for 2.5, 3 years. It's amazing to me he's on speaking terms with Bush 43, but that's the kind of class act he is. So this is what Admiral Kirby did. Admiral Kirby actually said the Wall Street Journal story about a spy base in Cuba financed by China, billions into Cuba, by the way, did not true. Then he comes back and says, well, it is true, but it was from 2019. So I lied, but it's because they had it in 2019. Keep in mind, this same surveillance tools were used by the Cuban communist government to crack down on the uprising among Cuban people who just wanted some semblance of freedom after 60 years of oppression. This administration did nothing, but the billions for China hurt Cuban people and hurt and allowed them to put a spy base in their country. Again, that's what China does. They come in with money and they extort you when you can't pay it back.
It never stops. Never stops. Brian Kilmeade, great stuff. Thanks very much indeed, sir. See you again soon.
Again, I'm Stuart. See you tonight at 8.
Yeah, you got it. AI companies.
1-866-408-7669. That is so true. And I don't, you know, as for example, if you catch me speeding, I say, well, listen, everybody else was speeding. That's whataboutism. What I'm talking about with the court case is not that the 37 counts are invalid or are valid. Oh, and they're not serious. They are serious. But I'm just saying you can't drag one guy's butt into court and not the other two. And what's crazy to me is that Hillary Clinton seems to be elated about this. Does she even understand, have any semblance of self-awareness, how bad she looks? Because all this stuff is coming back up to the surface again. For example, when President Clinton finishes office, we're not really talking about all his affairs and Monica Lewinsky because he was relatively successful. There was peace during his time, and the economy was thriving. But what he did is leave the groundwork for 9/11. When she runs for office and starts accusing Trump of having dicey relationships with women or whatever the accusers are, he goes, okay, I got an idea. Let's roll out all of your husband's accusers. So she doesn't even realize the ground she's walking down, that she can't be clean with this. She should keep her head down and not bring up a word about this because it just conjures up people remembering what you did with the phony Russia investigation and what you did with your emails, your BlackBerries, and your private server. Destroyed them. That's what we remember. So those are a few of the things that we've been working on. So tonight at 8, I'm going to be doing Fox News tonight at 8 o'clock on Fox Nation, on Fox News Channel. And at which time I'll be able to talk for 15 minutes. I'm probably going to bring a couple of analysts on, legal analysts on, to talk about what we've seen today at 3, which is 4 hours from now, and then talk about the president's rally and what is he going to say. I don't know if we're going to take the whole thing, but he's been coming out on time of late, and what he's been doing is getting a ton of money. And what we're also seeing is his opponents are realizing I might be better off attacking him if I want the job. So far, Ron DeSantis and Vivek Ramaswamy have been supportive and said, what about these guys? What about one standard of justice? The others are beginning to open up and take fire. And Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson, the most aggressive. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Don't move.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. This is the latest minute of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Kirk Cameron at the bottom of the hour, actor, writer, producer, best-selling author. Judge Jeanine's making her way now to the show. We have so much legal to talk about. This morning, Vivek Ramaswamy spoke, had a bit of a rally, and is demanding, through a FOIA request, to find out the communication between the Attorney General and the President of the United States, to find out what, if anything, is behind the investigation and the subsequent indictment that came its way. The President keeps saying, I had nothing to do with that, nothing to do with it. It's already been proven to be incorrect when it comes to teachers and the pandemic. We'll see what else is there. Meanwhile, Judge Jeanine is just getting ready with her various apparatus. Judge, it's going to be a historic day. Not a great day in Trump world, but a historic day, wouldn't you say?
Well, I don't think it's a great day in Trump world or in America. To be honest with you, the indictment of a former president, a candidate for president of the United States, is a very sobering moment for this nation. Sobering primarily because most people in this country, and you know what the numbers are, 47% think that in the end, this is really an issue of selective prosecution and a continuing persecution of the man since he came down that escalator in 2015.
Your book's now out, called Crimes Against America, The Left's Takedown of Our Republic. It seems this is going to be a chapter in your paperback.
Well, yeah, it's not only going to be a chapter. The whole book is, it couldn't be more timely given what's going on in this country. The truth is that this isn't just a crime or a charge against Donald Trump. This is something that involves the country. It's a crime against America, where we are politicizing the Department of Justice, the FBI, indicting a candidate for president, and the administration is the guy who's running against him for president. And by the way, you know, we don't have to go that far back to figure out Joe Biden's deal. He's the one who said from the get-go, oh, I don't know anything about my son's overseas business activities. I know nothing. What is that? What is that, Brian? That is called consciousness of guilt. That is a man who knows he's got a lot to hide and he better hide it.
Well, a couple of things. Do you remember when he looked right in the camera and said 51 intelligence experts, including five CIA directors, said that this is classic Russian disinformation, knowing damn well this is his son's laptop with all his pictures on there and his voice? So he had no problem looking in the camera saying that.
Well, he not only had no problem looking in the camera and lying to the American people, he had no problem orchestrating it. He knew that this thing was put together by all of his cronies in the swamp to make sure he could make a point against Donald Trump, because he is the essence of corruption. Joe Biden and his family are the part of an organized criminal enterprise. And I talk about this in Crimes Against America. Right now, every institution of our government, whether it's the education, whether it's Justice Department, whether it has to do with the free speech of the press and everyone else, has been compromised by these leftists, socialists, Marxists who want to win at any cost.
Right. I wanted to first tap into your knowledge just of the law. And what's going to happen today at 3 o'clock, the president's going to make his way down. We're not going to have any cameras. No, there's going to be no audio. What we're going to have, though, is a bunch of reporters, no ancillary room, who are going to take in what they're seeing visually, maybe take some notes and then run out to their cameras.
Right.
When it's all said and done, the president's going to have a rally at 8:15 tonight. But in between, will motions be filed in front of the magistrate judge, for example, to dismiss the charges of anything to do with flipping of his attorney to become a witness against his client?
Well,
will those type things be put into motion today?
Let me tell you what's going to happen today. Today is the official unsealing of the indictment, where the defendant will be advised of the charges against him. He will be asked how he pleads. His attorneys may say, you know, we waive a reading of the indictment and we will enter a plea of not guilty. The judge or the magistrate at that point will then give them a motion schedule or calendar. Your motions are due at this time and responses at this time. There's a whole calendar. Now, if you'll recall Jack Smith, and this is a man who is, who is known for his political unsuccessful prosecutions against a governor in Virginia, against Don Young in Alaska, against John Edwards. He's been rejected.
Senator Menendez.
He's been rejected by the Supreme Court, by appellate courts, and by juries. This guy, to get up and say, we're going to guarantee he gets a speedy trial. Let me tell you something, Brian. I've got three decades as a prosecutor, judge, and DA. I have never heard a prosecutor insisting on a speedy trial. That's not for him to ask for. But that shows the politicization of the Department of Justice. And make no mistake, this is a special counsel, not a special prosecutor. He answers to Merrick Garland. This did not move without Merrick Garland. And in my book, Crimes Against America, The Left's Takedown of Our Society, I talk about all of the prosecutions by these left-wingers and that Eric Holder, who was held in contempt of Congress, wants to come out preemptively and say, we're going to also, if you win, we're going to also impeach you. I mean, give me a break. Get over your derangement syndrome. Let the man run. Let him run. If Americans don't want him, then that's the end of it.
Right. Part of voting for him or not will say, how did he handle classified documents? I want DeSantis. Or, after his 4 years, I want Nikki Haley. Whatever your situation, I like her foreign policy. I'd rather Tim Scott. Tim Scott talks about vision, Martin Moore, Reagan. I'll make that choice.
Right.
But what they're trying to do is pull Trump out of it.
Right.
And I think it's freaking him out that he's winning and gaining. He gained 10 points overall and 10 points from DeSantis since the Alvin Bragg indictment. What do you think is going to happen after this?
Well, I think that Americans see, they sense, they feel that it is intrinsic. They know that there is an unfair system of justice. We Americans have been bred to believe in freedom and truth and justice. And we have been confronted and slapped around since the Barack Obama years, where they said, no one is going to slander the Prophet Muhammad at the UN. And everybody started talking, what about the First Amendment, Barack Obama? When Barack Obama said he would fundamentally transform the country. And then you fast forward to Joe Biden, and all you've got is there really are kids when they're in school. And by the way, the FBI, they didn't have anything to do with social media saying, right, don't expect a Hunter Biden laptop in the form of Russian disinformation. Really?
Chris Christie is becoming the ultimate attack dog. And by the way, just on this, it looks like Donald Trump is putting a new legal team together. I love James Trustee. I just wish he was stuck around. They have Chris Keis and Todd Blanche, and they're looking to expand it. Do you have news on that?
Well, no. The only thing that I didn't answer your last question, and let me just say, the feds are expert at taking the attorney for the accused and threatening him as that he is part of, or she is part of, a criminal conspiracy if they don't turn around and testify against their client. That is a violation of the attorney-client privilege. And Brian, as sure as I'm sitting here, I have seen it happen at least 8 times in 8 different cases. They go right for the jugular. They take the attorney off and they say, we're going to charge you with being a aiding and abetting a criminal act. And the attorney's like, what are you talking about? I'm representing my client. This is how unfair this has all gotten by the feds.
So this is so interesting because Brett Tolman just said, judging by the 49-page indictment, most of the damaging information came from the attorney. And the transmission, the text messages and emails between the two.
Right.
And maybe some of the tape recordings. But I want you to hear. I don't love that he had these documents in a time in which he knows there's great scrutiny. Give them back. You don't need them. Go back and you'll get it in 4 years if you stay on a roll.
Well, then why did Joe Biden take him and spread him all over the place in 4 different locations?
And we have no answer on that investigation.
Yeah.
So here's what Chris Christie said, who was a prosecutor, famously, cut 8.
I did this for 7 years in New Jersey. We did 130 political corruption prosecutions without a loss. What I can tell you for sure, I know about that indictment, is there's probably about a third of the evidence they actually have is in that indictment.
There's a lot more.
There will guaranteed be a lot more. When you're a prosecutor, you never put every card on the table before the trial. And so there's going to be a lot more. Don't be fooled. There's a lot more information to come when they go to trial. Specifically, I think there are going to be a lot of witnesses who actually worked for Donald Trump who are now going to be testifying against him.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. First of all, Chris Christie apparently hates Donald Trump right now. But there will be witnesses who will testify. I don't know this personally, but that's what the feds do. They turn these witnesses and they say, you know, you're a material witness. You have to testify, or, you know, we're going to charge you with perjury if they've said something else at another time. Look, these are very dangerous, dangerous, treacherous waters for anyone who's been involved in this case, because the feds are gunning for a conviction unlike any case they've ever handled before.
Right, but the timing should be November of 2024, right?
Right.
I mean, not even this year.
Right.
And then if it gets close, you got to think that Elaine Cannon, who is the judge, will say, I'm not going to get involved in an election. We're going to wait for this thing to be over.
Right. Well, there's no question. I think the judge here, and let's be clear, I mean, they want her off the case. I looked at the number of judges in the Southern District of Miami, and they're either Obama judges or Trump judges. I think there may be one Bush judge. All right. They want an Obama judge. They have been forum shopping and court shopping for years. They want every advantage. And yet when anything comes out that indicates, you know, something may not be what they say it is, they ignore it.
All right. So listen, Judge Jeanine is here. The great news is her book is still out. It's still available and it's still selling great. And it's called, and it's so appropriate now. And that's not the name of it. Here it is. It is called Crime Against America. So you can
the left's takedown of our republic. And it is everything that's happening today. It couldn't be more contemporary.
All right. When we come back, I want to bring you to what Senator Grassley said yesterday. So it is electric. And we're following all the events that are taking place in Miami. Security is high. People worry about emotions getting high and getting out of control. I hope it doesn't. But there's no separating both sides. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
According to the 1023, the foreign national possesses two audio recordings of phone calls between him and then Vice President Joe Biden. These recordings were allegedly kept as a sort of insurance policy for the foreign national in case that he got into a tight spot.
So that is Senator Grassley yesterday, and I was, even though he fumbled through the script, I just listened to it, and I was just stunned. First I read the transcript, then I watched it back. Senator Grassley says that 1023 that he looked at was redacted, that everyone saw on the Oversight Committee. It turns out he got information, I assume, Judge Jeanine Pirro, over the weekend that said that part of the redaction said there were 17 tapes, two of which contained the former vice president, now president, talking to the head of Burisma. And Hunter is in the other 15, and some of them might have all three, and it could be as much as $5 million exchanged.
Yeah.
This is part of the theme of your book, Crimes Against America, the left's the takedown of our republic. But this is the brand new chapter, which will be in your paperback.
Yeah.
Could you give me a scenario where all of a sudden Grassley, with all his prestige, mm-hmm. would put it on the line yesterday?
Let me tell you something, and you said it very accurately. Chuck Grassley is one of the most respected and revered United States senators. He doesn't play around. He is as straight as an arrow. He's not political. He is known for what he's done with whistleblowers and protecting them. Chuck Grassley, to make it clear, that there are tapes, that there appear to be tapes where, you know, they've got, look, what they were doing is that the head of Burisma, he's not going to just give him $5 million and go on his merry way. He's got to have tapes. Any business executive is going to make tapes of their conversation and make sure he gets what he was promised. All right. So I am absolutely convinced that they have these tapes. Now, why would the FBI not allow us to get the 1023 when the 1023, which has this information in it, was never classified? This is not classified information. The FBI is covering up for the Biden crime family. The FBI and the Department of Justice is doing everything they can to prevent this stuff from coming out. Do I have to say anything other than Hunter Biden's laptop investigation has taken 5 years? I could write the accusatory instrument right now. If it is true, if Joe Biden, if there are tapes, and we've got the money trail, we've got the corroboration.
Only one bank has given us a lot.
Yeah, one bank out of 10. We've got corroboration. We've got Bob Alinsky. We've got the laptop, which is a treasure trove of evidence corroborating circumstantial contemporary evidence of what was going on. It is all there. And they're laughing at us saying, look over there, Donald Trump is a crook.
And it's so interesting that Robert Hur, who's doing the investigation on Biden, we don't hear anything. And know what they said last week? We're not close to finished. Really?
Of course
not. All we have to do is go through pages. There's no witness in Italy hiding out in some villa. All you have to do is go through paperwork. You have as much. Don't you have interns in the summer? Don't they file in? Can't you go through some of the things at these different locations and give us an indication of the classification of what's there?
And have you seen any puff pieces on Robert Hur? Nobody even knows who Robert Hur is. He is the cover for the Biden family as it relates to these classified documents and the crimes that are occurring and have been occurring since Joe Biden was a senator. Think about it. Who do you know who's been in Washington for almost half a century and didn't do a damn thing, but has reached the heights of power that Joe Biden has with beach houses? Give me a break. His wife's a school teacher. All right? They've got beach houses.
You mean the doctor?
Dr. Jill. Right.
But Judge, let me ask him, and this is a legitimate question. Bill Barr came out and said, this is real. I gave it to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh investigated, but they weren't allowed to charge, so we gave it over to Delaware. But through that process, Bill Barr did not at any point say there were tapes. Why is that? Did he not know? Could Senator Grassley have gotten it wrong? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think that Bill Barr probably wouldn't offer any information other than to comment on the information that's already out. Look, I don't see Bill Barr as the kind of guy who's out there fighting for, you know, the average American or fighting to maintain confidence in our justice system. He is part of the institution. He is part of the establishment. He is part of that whole crew. Is he respected? Yes, by many. But I'm not so sure that, you know, I take his concerns as greatly as other people do.
So today at 3 o'clock, they are going to ask, according to Francie Hakes, she came out and said that there might be a move to detain the president. Think about that for a second. Even if it not fulfilled by a magistrate judge, is that possible? They say that these classifications, and this is so egregious, we don't think he should be allowed out of prison.
You know, Brian, it's one time in my life, but very few, that I don't even have an answer for it. It is so outrageous. It is so beyond the pale. It is so indicative of their hatred and the Trump derangement syndrome by these people. They don't want him out there. Joe Biden's got stuff in his garage with his drug addict son who's running around the world collecting money, millions in garbage bags from China, our enemy, while China's pissing all over the United States. Give me a break.
It would be crazy to have happen. From what the president has, he's got two attorneys right now, mm-hmm. and they say that they're looking for others. How many do you need?
Well, I think in a case like this, you need several attorneys. You need a team. I mean, there's a lot going on. The feds, the prosecution's going to want to move very quickly. They're going to want to make motion.
You got to go 37 for 37.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I think you need a big team. And the Fed's business is to threaten all these lawyers so that Trump doesn't have the representation he's entitled to.
Crimes Against America is now out. It gives the background of how we got to the place we are right now. And if you are exercised about this after reading it, you'll take action and understand.
Yeah.
You know, not everything's perfect, but there should be equal justice.
Yep.
Judge Jeanine, we'll see you on the 5 tonight.
Yeah, I'll be there. Right. And I appreciate it, Brian. Keep fighting the good fight. We
Absolutely.
All are.
Crimes Against America. Pick it up.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're here with Kirk Cameron, actor, writer, producer, best-selling author. His latest book is called Pride Comes Before the Fall, aimed at children in a good way to help influence in a positive way. And as usual with Kirk, wherever you go, it creates controversy and it also sells books. Kirk, great to see you in person, man.
You too. It's great to be here. The idea that kids' books about love, joy, kindness, gentleness, and self-control are controversial.
How dare you?
Tells us where we've come in our society.
Right. I mean, this is Pride Month, and now the president said a couple of days ago as Pride celebration, he's front of the bravest people he knows. And I just said to myself, if I'm in the military and I'm a Navy SEAL and I'm sitting there with face paint on in Somalia, I'm wondering if the people, as much as I respect the people on the lawn, is that really the kind of statement you want to make as president?
I don't think so. I don't think you think so either.
I know.
And the whole concept is so ironic to me, because if you think about pride and traditionally what that term has really stood for, it's not synonymous with love like we see in the rainbow letters in the Starbucks window, love and pride, love and pride. They're actually the opposite, because love is about others and about God, and pride is actually about ourself. And so a right term to express maximum love would be humility, serving others, not serving myself. And the idea that we have a month set aside to celebrate who some people like to have sex with or like to have sex as is mind-boggling. And to teach that to children not only doesn't make sense, I think it reveals the agenda, which is to indoctrinate children with a worldview that in a couple of decades becomes the only normal they know, and family and church has been deconstructed and replaced with the state.
I'm watching a state lawmaker in California make a statement that their 7-year-old is gender fluid.
Yeah, he knows because he understands all these things at 7 years old.
That's insane. This other one saying, I knew my kid was in the wrong sex at 3 years old, and they knew it. I mean, what do you say to that? And now if you're a parent that stands in the way of your kid changing genders, you could have your kid taken away in California. I hope you don't live there anymore.
Live in California.
What is wrong with you?
That's right. You know, God made a beautiful place, and with
incredible
mountains and beaches and weather, no bugs or humidity, but the people have really trashed it. I love listening to you, and I love talking and having these discussions because you just make so much sense, and it seems like so much of the society has gone insane. It appears now that transgenderism is the only acceptable religion on the left, and it is a religion. It's like a cult, and the public schools have become its church, where our children are indoctrinated at the youngest of ages now. And we are dogmatically told that we must sacrifice their hearts and minds on the altar of wokeism and bring our tithes and offerings in the form of taxes.
Right.
So we've got to wake up and say, what is the cure for this cult?
You know what's so interesting is that I remember as a kid, fourth grade, you got to pick an instrument. And I thought to myself, and I remember the family discussion, it's really too early to pick an instrument.
To know.
I just won. That was the family discussion. I'm like, I'm thinking clarinet, but it could be the trumpet. What if I make the wrong decision? Woodwind or brass? So that was the big decision back then. And now you're saying sooner or later you're going to have to pick a gender. I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I'm hoping man.
That's right.
So what is I mean, sometimes I think we're being punked, some of these conversations, that this is not really happening. Listen to Dylan Mulvaney, who single-handedly, not necessarily his fault, destroyed Bud Light. Listen to what Dylan hopes for.
Like the articles written about me using he pronouns and calling me a man over and over again. And I feel like that should be illegal. I don't know. That's just bad journalism.
Do you think people should be arrested for that?
Of course not. You see, this is the kind of delusion that comes over not only individuals, but eventually the entire nation when we don't have a moral standard that is fixed.
Right.
And some things are always going to be evil. Murdering children in the womb is bad, whether you call that health care or not. But if you've uprooted yourself from transcendent truths like Love God with all of your heart. The path of obedience to his word is the path of blessing. Choose to sin, choose to suffer. If you get rid of all of that stuff, you now become a standard unto yourself and anything's possible, like we're hearing from Dylan and other people. But that story never ends well. That's why I'm trying to tell stories to kids that are about truth and beauty and goodness, rightly understood. And I want to talk to kids about pride being dangerous, humility being virtuous, and that's what every common sense parent knows. You don't send your kids to school and say, hey, honey, I hope you learn to be a person full of pride today. No, I want you to learn how to be kind and humble.
And in your book, Pride Comes Before the Fall, how many pages? 25?
I think it's something so it's, like 24 it's, or 22.
It meant to send a message. Now, being prideful of accomplishments, being prideful of who you are, that could be positive, right?
Yeah.
So what are you trying to get across? Sometimes pride gets in the way, as adults especially.
Yeah. So when I tell my son I'm proud of him, what I'm saying is I'm celebrating his accomplishments. Or I'm saying, man, I'm proud to be an American. I'm grateful. I'm so thankful that I live here. I feel like I won the lottery. But this idea of pride is the one where you exalt yourself. You're focused. It's a narcissistic quality that says, look at me, celebrate me. It's about me being better than other people. I think pride is the root of racism. It's when you judge others and use yourself as the standard of what's best. I think pride is at the root of misogyny or white supremacy or any kind of violation of human rights. Pride, Jesus said, is what caused Satan to fall from heaven like lightning, because he tried to overthrow God and grab his glory. And that's what pride does to us. It makes us think that we can be our own God, that we can define morality, we can define gender, and we can create reality in our own image.
Right. And it just seems like surreal in dealing with people that have a different view of things that we used to take for granted. We used to debate things like stem cell research, which is deep. We can go back and forth, and very smart people going back and forth. AI is a very good debate to have. It's on a high level. Tell me about it. This is how I feel. Those are interesting debates that are worthy of our time. I feel sometimes like, am I really doing a talking? Last night, I did the 8 o'clock show, and two of our blocks were about transgenderism. And I'm thinking to myself, there's got to be something more important than this out there, but it seems to be raging. And then I watch Mark Cuban, who I really respect. You watch him on Shark Tank all the time. He came out and said, despite Target losing $15 billion of market cap, Bud Light no longer being the king of beers, it is good for these companies to go woke. Take a short-term loss. This is good business. I don't understand. He didn't explain himself. Can you explain what he's talking about?
I have no idea. I would like that. That's the question that all of us want answered, is why? Why is that good for business? Why would these giant companies do it? I saw an interview with Larry Fink and BlackRock, and he was talking about the forcing of companies like this to go woke, or they will be impacted with regard to how much money they get in credit from places like Vanguard and BlackRock, that if they don't go woke, they will go broke. So I don't think that it's Target's not getting the message in terms of people saying we don't want to go there.
I think
that there is a louder message in their ear from the money sources saying, if you don't do what we say, you're going broke.
So here's what he says. There is a reason almost all of the top 10 market cap companies in the U.S. can be considered woke. It's good business. Most CEOs have enough experience to know to just wait out the news cycle until they go to the next one. First a dip in the market cap is meaningless. You have to realize that there aren't many individual owner of stocks. Almost all ownership is via various funds, and he goes on.
So what they're saying is that these mutual fund controllers are really setting the moral narrative for the nation. And as long as people go along with it and accept it, then they're right. It'll pass, and then the next generation will say, oh, this is all a good thing.
So John Crist is an outstanding comedian. He actually, his parents, they're both pastors. His dad was a pastor and they was in a church. So he uses comedy through religion. So he's religious-oriented. He's in Salt Lake City, and he's known for his videos. So try to picture this. Here's John Crist talking about Pride Month, Salt Lake City version.
Yo, I've been walking around Salt Lake for like an afternoon. This city cannot, literally cannot get enough of Pride Month. Just literally drinking out of a fire hose. And I was thinking to myself, has any city, like, waved the white flag quicker and, like, surrendered easier than Salt Lake City? Except for, obviously, PGA Tour surrendering to the LIV Tour. Has anyone else given up without a fight quicker than Salt Lake? Like, used to be the capital of the LDS Church, very values-based city. You know what I'm saying? Like, can't buy alcohol on Sundays. The alcohol you do buy is, like, has less alcoholic content. Like, very, a lot of rules. And just the progressive movement came in and just immediately, like, we're sorry, we didn't mean to offend anyone. Please do whatever you want. Take our city. Like, even Texas, they're like, hey, we want to wave the Pride flag. And they're like, nah, we're good. We love you, but nah, I don't think so. Salt Lake City just gave up, dude.
He's just talking about one of the most conservative cities, the LDS Church, and wherever you go, there was a flag, and you see him walking around.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in America, I think we have amnesia. We've forgotten who we are, and we've forgotten how we got all of this prosperity and liberty. All of our political system, the basis for all of it comes out of a value system that is diametrically opposed to this woke mafia and its standards. And if you don't know who you are and you don't know whose you are, you don't know where you came from, you certainly don't understand where you're going with all of this stuff, and you're in trouble. And that's why I appreciate you. It's why I appreciate those who are standing for what's true and what's good. And we need to teach these things to our kids because they're the most easily manipulated and deceived.
And no one's anti-gay. We're not saying that. I just think that if you're going to put a month aside, what about a military month instead of a Memorial Day? You know, if you're looking to carve out a month, maybe that would be a better idea. Listen, Kirk, can you stick around?
Yeah.
You don't want to?
No, I'm wanting to be truthful. I want to know that I've got time to stick around, but I want to stick around.
What do you think, Pete? Do you think he has time to stick around?
I think for you, everybody makes time.
Really? I think that would have been nice for Kirk to say, as opposed to you. But no, can
beat
you?
Beat me to the punch. I think I can. Zach, do we have time? Can I stay for a little bit longer? Yeah. Good.
Oh, you got a thumbs up. Yeah, thumbs up through the glass.
Yeah, I just don't know the schedule.
This is a true slice of life reality show. Kirk Cameron's here. He does not know his schedule, but he knows he wants to stay. Pride comes before the fall. Download it now, especially for parents. Father's Day is coming up. What a great gift to get your dad. Fred, you buy it for him, and he reads it to you. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Can we take a little video? Hi, Mr. President. It is an honor. Fans rights and human rights.
Are we topless at the White House?
So after he, this transgender guy, or I assume, shook hands with the president, immediately took their tops off on the White House lawn. Think about that. I mean, that's what the White House is doing.
These are dudes or girls?
They look like transgender women. So it's men, right? So it's like a man. So with fake breasts, takes the top off. So what am I supposed to say to that?
That's an image I never want to see.
Right. And I'm sorry for making you, but you did question me.
Yeah.
And I did wilt under the questioning. So that's what the president spent his day doing. That's the president's week. That and he had a root canal.
Yeah. I called the White House the other day, and I left a message because I had this idea as I was having my coffee. You know, I was walking here in the city, and I'm passing the Starbucks, and I'm seeing the love, pride, and then I see Biden raise the pride flag over the White House, and I thought to myself, you know, what would George Washington do if he were the president of the United States? And I found George Washington actually had a flag that he raised. George Washington raised the humility flag under his leadership as commander-in-chief of the Continental Army in 1775, and it said, an appeal to heaven, an appeal to heaven, a declaration of humility and dependence upon God, which is the opposite of pride. So our nation was actually founded and built on humility, not on pride. And so I called the White House, and I wrote in a suggestion. I don't know if Joe will call me back or not, but I said, if you really want to be a nation that's known for love, 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 and loving well, we need to swap out the pride flag for the original humility flag.
Right. I don't think you should have watched the Tonys. Did you?
I did not.
Right. That was basically – they called Governor DeSantis the Grand Wizard. So – and it just went downhill from there.
Mm.
So that's the president's audience. I wish that there was some type of semblance of sanity out there. Not anti-anything. Just live your life, but leave the kids alone. And that's what your book kind of pushes back on that. Can you just let kids be kids? I mean, is that possible? Why are you delving into it? Why do you have to pass a law that says do not talk about genderism or sexuality before seventh grade? Why does it have to have a law for that?
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. That sounds crazy to us. But when I think about it from – try to get to 100,000 feet, actually those on the left that are looking to indoctrinate kids are doing it for the same reasons that you and I as parents want to be in charge of teaching our children from the youngest of ages. We read books to our kids in the womb. Why are you going after the kids? They're not even born yet. Well, because the concept is – their little hearts and minds are so malleable, you want to get to them as early as possible with the values you want them to hold dear. And that's what they're doing. So it's crazy when we see drag queens going after kids. But to them, that is the way you break down the structure of the family and structure of the church.
Why would someone want that?
Well, because that fundamentally puts the elites in control. So our country is based on the decentralization of power and putting into the hands of the people, breaking up the branches of government and putting parents in authority over their children and the states primarily with the rights, not the federal government. But the opposite is what authoritarians and dictators want to do is they want to eliminate all that, consolidate power at the top. And the way you do it is you got to take out the family and you got to take out the church.
So it's interesting. Stanford University did a study about charter schools to see how successful they were. And what happened during the pandemic? Well, kids suffered. They didn't go to school. And also parents listened in. And they heard what was happening on Zoom in many situations. And they were horrified. And it's caused a boom in charter schools. And it turns out almost everywhere, charter schools gives kids on average 16 more hours of education a week. And their test scores are significantly up. And guess what? A lot of people are seeking out and finding the charter schools, and they never would have. They said, well, my older kid went to that school. I went to that school. So I came out all right. Let's just go. What's worse? You have a bad teacher here and there? And now people are realizing, no, I got to go seek it out. And in a way, couldn't that be a good thing?
Yeah, no. No, it's the difference between indoctrination and education. And the government, in my opinion, should have nothing to do with education. That is belongs in the realm of the family and led by the people who love the kids most, and that's
Kirk
their
Cameron,
parents.
Thanks so much. Pride comes before the fall. Congratulations. Go pick it up. Download it now. And I'll see everybody tonight at 8 o'clock on Fox News Tonight.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.